You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, February 8th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Ari Berman of The Nation magazine on the GOP, not plans, but actual resegregation of the South. Isn't that sweet? Also later in the program, Jeff Smith. He's on the Occupy Wall Street bus somewhere in upstate New York, I think. We will speak to him. Also, the bank settlement scuttled, perhaps. Catholic bishops continue to complain about a national law that is already law in some 25 states, and old white guys who go on television shows continue to listen and harp on it. And of course, that means the Obama administration attempting to find a way to compromise away their position that women deserve some form of autonomy over their sexual behavior. Now, of course, we know that's disgusting. The idea that women are allowed to make their own decisions about their sexuality, well, of course, we find repugnant. It's just one more sign that society is spiraling out of control. Next, they'll probably have the opportunity to vote for president or something like that. I fear for the day that I cannot tell my wife what to do and she responds in a fashion that chattel should. I don't even want to think about it. It's horrible. Meanwhile, the Republicans, I guess we should mention that the Republicans still seem to hate Mitt Romney. And Rick Santorum won three caucuses last night. And this was such a surprise that Ari Fleischer was still tweeting moments before Santorum won Colorado that, pretty sure my people on the ground are telling me that Romney's got this one. So, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm sick of it. But occasionally we'll talk about it just because it's happening. And it really, at the end of the day, what we're just seeing is the Republicans battling over how much of a victory Obama's going to have in the fall. And I don't know, when we have Ari on in just a moment, I may go double or nothing on that bet. We will see. Longtime listeners know that I bet Ari Berman. Well, we'll talk about it with Ari. And later in the program, this is going to come to a huge shock to you, but apparently, you know how we heard about all those Muslim terrorists who were going to blow up the country? They didn't show. God. That's the one thing about those Muslim terrorists. Really, really unreliable. Often tardy. And, of course, we'll talk more about Proposition Hate falling, well, once again, I guess, being reaffirmed as being unconstitutional. We'll talk about what's next with that. All this and more in this program that's free for many of you. Can you believe it? You probably already owned a computer. We're going to take a break when we come back. Ari Berman. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back on the phone. It is always a pleasure to welcome to the program the lovely and talented Ari Berman of The Nation magazine. Welcome, Ari.
Thank you, Sam. You're too kind, and I, of course, would say the same thing about you.
Well, yes, no, I know that. I know that's why I did it. Now, have you finished tweeting out the...
I just tweeted it.
You did? All right. Well, I'm gonna give you an old retweet on this one.
I won't be on Twitter the whole time or checking email while we're talking.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. You know, I got a problem with your colleague at The Nation. I know you guys don't all sit in one room and write your stories. I know it's not like Lou Grant or anything over there. But Eric Alterman, not only will he read and do other things, he'll eat. He will eat entire meals when I interview him.
Yeah, you don't want to have Eric on a panel with his cell phone on because he's usually scrolling through.
Yes,
even when he's on a panel.
I love Eric. I love him. Yeah. I enjoy being around him because it's really very rare that you get to see someone who is so. I don't want to say he's rude because I don't think he's rude. He just seems to be completely oblivious of other people around him, and it's actually sort of I find that incredibly entertaining.
Yeah, yeah. Let's just say he possibly doesn't have Obama's empathy gene.
That's right. He does not feel your pain. In fact, many times he will cause it. But be that as it may, let's talk about your story. We'll touch on. The Republican primary race, because it's just become, I don't know, it's just become so, it really has jumped the shark.
That was so amusing last night on so many different levels.
But we'll talk about that in a minute, because this story is the story that you have in The Nation, how the GOP is resegregating the South, is in many respects far more disturbing. Now, demographically speaking, we know that Obama, this is his election to lose. If you broke out the numbers in 2008 and Obama won even remotely close to the same percentages that he won against McCain and still managed to lose a couple of percentages across the board in the white person division, Obama still walks away with the election. And you have written in the past a great piece on the Republicans' attempts to essentially shrink the electorate by disenfranchising people's right to vote. And now you have a piece that is really more about congressional districts and how the Republicans are attempting to gerrymander in a way to give them an advantage in these races. Tell us about what they've done, actually. These aren't even plans.
Yeah, absolutely. So the conventional wisdom is that because the country is becoming more diverse demographically, it's becoming there's more African Americans, there's more Hispanic, there's more Asians, that will not only benefit Barack Obama in 2010, but it'll benefit Democrats more broadly because, by and large, these minority groups tend to favor Democratic candidates at varying levels, but they're not flocking to the GOP, which is an overwhelmingly white party, particularly in the South. So what Republicans have done is they very adeptly manipulated the congressional maps and the state legislative maps in the states that they control to maintain their dominance, to protect their gains from 2010, and also to get new gains in 2012. And it's important to just step back and tell people how the redistricting process works. So the new census came out in 2010, which means that every state has to redraw their districts based on the population growth for the next decade. And they do that after the 2010 election. And by virtue of the fact that Republicans won so many seats in 2010, they actually control 20 states in the redistricting process versus 7 states for Democrats. And the rest are home to either independent redistricting commissions or to divided government. And they have particular control down south, which even though it has trended Republican for many years on the presidential level and on the statewide level, Democrats controlled the state houses in most of the South until 2010. They basically controlled it from Reconstruction until the last election. So now Republicans are in control of all these states in the South, including really important swing states like North Carolina and Virginia. And what they've done, and this is a pattern here, is they've essentially tried to turn the Democratic Party into the quote-unquote black party while making the Republican Party the white party. And they did that by shifting as many minorities as possible into as few districts as possible, and then diluting the minority vote in those seats held by white Democrats. So essentially, they're taking out white Democrats, they're concentrating black Democrats, and they're making Republicans a majority everywhere else. And that gives them a major advantage in terms of the redistricting maps for the next decade.
So in other words, if you have, in these states, if you have a district that is has a high concentration of minorities, what they'll do is they'll redistrict so that any minorities that may be in a contiguous district actually get sort of thrown into that first district.
Yeah.
Essentially saying that, like, this district we're willing to sacrifice from the Republican perspective. This district will always be a district dominated by minorities, but it basically corrals minorities into these districts and allows for predominantly white districts outside of it, and essentially sort of saying, like, we will give up this district for the next 10, 20, 30, maybe forever, because it will allow us to stay in play in these districts that are contiguous to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So take North Carolina, for example, which is sort of the centerpiece of my article. Right now, North Carolina is 7-6 Democrat versus Republican in terms of its congressional representation. After redistricting, simply by shifting around the maps, Republicans will control 10 of 13 seats in North Carolina. That's the largest shift for Republicans at any state this year at the congressional level. And this is how they did it. In 2008, Obama won 8 of 13 districts in North Carolina. There was a lot of swing districts in the state, and he did very well in all of them. Now, if you look at the new congressional maps, Obama would have only won 3 of those districts. So he's down from 8-3. And this is how they did it. They made the 3 Democratic districts, which are overwhelmingly minority now, 68% or higher for Obama, while all the rest of the seats now are 55% or higher for John McCain. So they essentially, they were fine with creating 3 heavily Democratic districts because it meant that the rest of the state would go Republican. And there's now virtually no swing districts in North Carolina. You have a few Democratic districts, and the rest of them are heavily Republican. And that's really what we've seen replicated across the South.
What do these districts look like? I mean, they must be drawn in such a bizarre manner. I mean, that's nothing, I guess, terribly new, but I mean, don't people look at these maps and go, hey, wait a second?
Yeah, a redistricting expert told me that the North Carolina districts are the ugliest that he's ever seen. And I talk about one district in Fayetteville that's held by a state senator by the name of Eric Mansfield. And Mansfield had a pretty compact district in Fayetteville that he won very easily in 2010. He's an African-American state senator. He ran for office for the first time in 2010. And it was basically a compact urban area. It included Fort Bragg and then most of the rest of Fayetteville. It had what's known as a black voting age population of 45%. So it was a pretty socioeconomically diverse district. And Mansfield actually lived in a part of town that was 90% white. But his district now, instead of looking like a relatively compact square, it looks like a squid, because essentially what they did is they moved the base of his district to another county, and they took out all the white parts of his district and moved them into an adjoining Republican district, and they put all the black people in his area into his district. And so they have these tentacles now in his district that reach in exclusively to the black parts of Fayetteville, and they increased the black voting age percentage in his district from 45% to 51%, which was totally unnecessary because he was already winning that seat easily. So that's an example of what they do. They put in as many minority voters, they take out as many white voters, and yeah, the maps are really, really ugly. And the larger point here, and this is what I was trying to get at in my article, is this is the very kind of resegregation that the Voting Rights Act was enacted to stop in 1965. This is taking us back to the very history in the South that so many people thought that we'd move beyond. And so that's what I think is so disturbing about this trend in redistricting this cycle.
All right, well, let's get into that. I mean, gerrymandering in and of itself is legal. In other words,
yeah.
For time immemorial, you've had sitting, you've had incumbents who, when they get a hold of the redistricting process, will shape their districts or their parties, their districts in such a way that it favors their parties.
Yeah.
There are, however, from the Voting Rights Act, requirements that, particularly in certain states, break this down for us, because there are some states that need to get pre-approval from the Justice Department because they have such a history of racial problems and keeping black people in particular from having some type of representation, that they need to pre-approve this stuff. So break that down for us. What did the Voting Rights Act say? And then give us the distinction between those states that need pre-approval and then have a sort of a shorter bar to jump over when they redistrict.
Yeah, so there's 16 states or parts of states that are covered by the Voting Rights Act, and that includes all the states of the South. And so they have to receive pre-clearance for any change they make that impacts minority voters. And they're not allowed to diminish the ability of minority voters to elect a candidate of their choice. And that means they have to receive pre-clearance for their redistricting maps, either from the Justice Department or from a three-judge panel in Washington, D.C. And this has actually been a really interesting topic, this redistricting cycle, because on the one hand, Republicans want to declare the pre-clearance requirement unconstitutional, and Clarence Thomas has already said that he thinks it's unconstitutional because he doesn't believe that intentional discrimination in voting exists any longer. But which is sort of ironic. But at the same time, Republicans have very effectively exploited the Voting Rights Act, because what they've done is they said, with the exception of in Texas, what they've said is, okay, we're not going to diminish the ability of minority voters to elect a candidate of their choice on the face of it, because we're actually going to create more of these majority-minority districts. And we're going to do that because if we can concentrate the minority vote into as few districts as possible, then we can then eliminate the white Democrats in the South, and we can ultimately hold down the Democrats' numbers as a result. And the Voting Rights Act really doesn't get at this kind of what it's known as packing of minority voters, because on the face of it, simply increasing a district that is 45% minority to 50% minority doesn't violate the Voting Rights Act. But the problem here is that it certainly violates the spirit of the Voting Rights Act, because Republicans are drawing these maps with the intended consequence of actually suppressing and concentrating the minority vote. But the problem is actually proving in court that violates the Voting Rights Act is difficult to do, which is why the Justice Department has pre-cleared all the southern redistricting maps, with the exception of Texas.
But I understand that it's difficult to do, but why is the Justice Department not even attempting it? I mean, this just seems like a complete capitulation. I mean, what is the opportunity cost here for the Justice Department to make the argument that, look, you are curbing the ability for there to be, you are at least redistricting with the idea of curtailing minority representation.
Yeah. Well, a lot of civil rights activists are unhappy the Justice Department hasn't been more aggressive. They have blocked Texas's redistricting map, because what happened in Texas, it was such a flagrant violation of minority voting rights. Texas grew by 4.3 million people between 2000 and 2010. Two-thirds of that growth came from Hispanics, and 11% came from African Americans. So basically 80% of the growth came from minorities. As a result, Texas gained four new congressional districts. But three of those four new seats are controlled now by white Republicans. So basically, Texas said, we're just going to ignore this minority growth altogether and give these seats to white Republicans instead of to black or Hispanic Democrats. So that was more flagrant than what happened in North Carolina. It was less sophisticated, it was more flagrant. So the Justice Department did block that. But I think the Justice Department is very concerned about the Supreme Court holding Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which is the preclearance requirement, unconstitutional. And so they're being very cautious in terms of challenging these laws, because they don't want the Supreme Court to overturn it, which sort of creates a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, they're letting a lot of egregious things go through because of the fear of something bad happening. So you could argue that the fact that Republicans have raised this issue of unconstitutionality has allowed them, in a way, to win this fight, because they've scared the Justice Department away, with the exception of a few different states, from really acting aggressively.
You know, Ari, maybe it's because I am so, so much older than you, or perhaps it's because I've had a cold for a week that I cannot seem to shake. But I have another more cynical reading of it, that it's not simply the Justice Department afraid of Section 5 being overturned, so let's not give the Supreme Court a bite at this apple. But it's also that, electorally speaking, what's going on with these congressional districts in no way impacts the Obama reelection.
Well, I would actually argue that that's not the case, because if you have a situation in the South where the Republican Party is the quote-unquote white party and the Democratic Party is the quote-unquote black party, that makes it harder for Obama to win in North Carolina and Virginia and Georgia.
But this redistricting does not in any way enhance that meme, certainly not until we see the results of the election.
No,
A,
it does. It enshrines a system of racially polarized voting that makes it harder for Democrats to win on the presidential and the statewide level.
That's about Obama. I'm not talking about future Democrats. I'm not talking about Congress people. I'm talking about this election. And I think if they go to court, then all of a sudden, and they make a big deal about race, then I think this plays into.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
You know,
I see what you're saying.
I'm talking
You're not talking about how Obama is perceived. You're talking about how the Justice Department wants Obama to be positioned in 2012.
Right. I think that, listen, the cost to the Obama reelection campaign is nil based upon these districts. The cost in going and challenging these redistricting is much higher.
But But the Justice Department has already caught flack for challenging Texas, and they've already caught flack for challenging the voter ID law in South Carolina.
They ain't going to win. They ain't going to win in Texas anyways. And there's certain flagrant things that they're going to have to deal with. But they don't want this to be the story 6 months, 7 months, 8 months out from the election.
But what I'm saying is if they've intervened in South Carolina with voter ID and they've intervened in Texas, they're already part of it. So Republicans are already mad at the Obama Justice Department. So that argument doesn't really make sense, because why would they intervene in a few places and not intervene elsewhere?
Because I don't want that story in if I think North Carolina is a possible swing state, I don't want that story in the local press there. I mean, people barely read the newspaper as it is. They're certainly not reading stories about South Carolina or Texas.
It's possible. I mean, it's hard, again, to speculate on the motives. I think it's more due to caution about the law itself. But you never know. Perhaps you're right, Sam. I mean, you're usually right, so I don't want to say that you're wrong.
Well, that brings us up to the bet. Now, you and I, back in March of 2008, was it March or February?
I can't remember.
Well, I mean, let's just call it March. But if it was February, that's even more amazing. We bet. I said, I will bet you $200. Now, to be fair, this was at a time where I was still, swimming in post.
That was all the money in your shoebox.
No, man. At that time I was swimming in post sitcom money, and so $200. You know, for me, that's like equivalent to Bloomberg giving $250,000 Planned Parenthood. It was nothing to me at that time, and so I bet you that Obama would win 52-48. He wasn't even the nominee at that time. 52-48 against McCain. And we bet $200. And obviously, I won. And, you know, I, being as at that time, still in 2009, early to this, floating in that sitcom money, I wasn't strong-arming you for the cash. And now I'm very close, based upon what's going on with the Republicans, to double or nothing on that. And I may even go to like 52.5. I think Romney's going to do worse than McCain.
It's hard to imagine that actually being possible, but I guess we never know. I mean, the turnout numbers have been awful, honestly. I mean, you would think that in 2012 the GOP turnout would be higher than from the than in 2012. Wait, sorry, I got confused there.
2008.
You'd think that 2012 would be higher than 2008, because 2008 Republicans were suffering from Bush fatigue, and they weren't that excited, and the Democrats had all the momentum. Now we have 4 years of Obama, the Republicans are hell-bent on defeating him. You'd think that in state after state after state, Republicans would just be itching to turn out and cast their ballot against the president in the GOP primary. But instead, turnout has been down in every Republican state with the exception of South Carolina compared to 2008, which I find really, really surprising. And Romney last night was down in every state compared to where he was in 2008 also. He won Minnesota and he won Colorado in 2008, and he did terribly in those states in 2012. So you got to ask yourself, why aren't people turning out for these contests if they are so hell bent on defeating the president? And how much of that's going to carry over to 2012? Because we already know that Romney's ratings, for example, among independent voters, are soaring in terms of his negative rating. So I think this is a really worrisome development. I think at this point in time, you know, if the economy keeps growing as it is, that Obama has to be considered a serious favorite for reelection.
I mean, look, there are two things that are going on. You know, I mean, if we go back to August of last year, two things that have happened that have severely hurt Romney. One is the Occupy movement. Because it became such a narrative in this country about Wall Street, about finance, about 1% versus 99%, that even a guy like Gingrich was able to raise this, and it makes Romney look that worse. And the fact that Gingrich and Santorum have been able to, and frankly all the other ones, they have pulled Romney to the right on social issues in a way that I think is starting to alienate, like you say, these independents. And so it's all of this is just about how weak Romney will be in the general election, I think. And he's going to be just, I think, incredibly weak. I mean, at what point does all this money start saying, like, am I really going to waste it on Romney? No, I'm gonna spend it a little bit more on the congressional races and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, it is too early to know exactly where the money is going. There has been an absolutely staggering shift of money from Wall Street away from Obama and towards Romney, particularly in the Romney super PAC. But yeah, you're totally right about Occupy Wall Street. I mean, Romney is basically the living, breathing, walking personification of the 1%. I mean, he couldn't be any more 1% if he tried. At a time when Americans are concerned about the 99%, and the longer this contest goes, and particularly if Santorum becomes the anti-Romney, he is going to push Romney to the right. In one example, yesterday Santorum was criticizing Romney for providing emergency contraceptives to rape victims while he was governor. I mean, that is an absolutely insane thing to be criticizing someone for. And Romney had to defend it and said, no, that wasn't what he was doing. So basically, Romney is now backing away from providing emergency contraceptives to rape victims. And that's the very kind of thing that is really going to alienate moderate suburban women swing voters. You know what I mean?
Well,
I mean,
all right, what are you suggesting? That rape can't provide you with a gift? Have you not seen Rick Santorum speak about this eloquently? If you have the right mindset, rape can be a gift.
I'm not even going to touch that, Sam. But the thing is
stammering in response to Rick. Hey, this guy's running for president, and he's saying this.
It's also just going to be incredibly awkward to try to watch Romney out culture warrior Rick Santorum, which is what he may need to do, which is just only going to get him into further trouble here. So yeah, I mean, I think he's going to emerge as a fairly weak front runner when this is all over.
It's going to be unbelievable. But meanwhile, you've got Obama now, you know, sort of going full hog on the super PAC thing. What's your sense on this? I mean, you know, I feel so disassociated in some ways from this race that I just, it doesn't, you know, it's just one more thing that I'm finding increasingly grotesque about this stuff. But what is your sense of this? I mean, is this in any way surprising? I mean,
no, it's not surprising, and honestly, it was probably inevitable, which doesn't make it justifiable, but it was probably inevitable because Obama was raising a ton of money, and the GOP was picking up the slack just based on their super PAC donations. What I found surprising was the fact that the Obama campaign was really, like, trumpeting this as like triumph. Like, Obama tweeted about it. Like, why does the president need to tweet about the fact that he's raising super PAC money? Can't he just tell his donors, like, hey, you should give money to the super PACs and have it leak into the New York Times? Like, why did this need to become the central focus of the Obama administration this week? It just seemed like really tone deaf politics to me.
Maybe he was just on the can and he was bored and he was just like, what do I got to tweet about? I got nothing.
Where are we taking
more money with our super PACs? Bam, bam, bam.
I mean, the economy just had, you know, its best month last month in a very long time. And
They sat on the story
and instead now they're talking about super PACs. I mean, it's just really, really tone deaf. They could say, yeah, this is a necessary evil. This is something we're going to have to deal with. But we're not happy about it. But they seemed almost giddy about it. And not only that, when Obama was asked, you know, what he's going to do to campaign against Citizens United, they kind of backed away from the whole idea that Obama was going to make that a central issue in the campaign, which, again, I find very surprising because so many Americans now hate that decision. And Romney is such an embodiment of the 1% politics that there's a lot of room to criticize him on that front. But Obama is really seeding that argument. So short term, it makes sense that they have their own super PAC. But I think the optics of it are really bad. I think long term, in terms of who's going to cut this money, it's just going to accelerate the further corporatization of our politics, which ultimately is what's so disconcerting about it.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if at one point our politics can just become so saturated with corporatization that you can't actually get any more.
Well, I'm going to write a piece about this now, but I mean, politics is exclusively now in the realm of the 1%, which is kind of ironic at a time when everyone's talking about the 99%, that the political system in both parties is just exclusively set up to cater only to the 1%. And I don't know what it's going to take to have to change that, but certainly in the 2012 election, that's where we're headed.
Well, that is a great segue, Ari Berman, because now we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Jeff Smith, who is actually on the Occupy Wall Street bus as we speak. So thank you for that segue.
No problem. I'm always happy to do a segue for you.
No, I appreciate that. And we'll be in touch about the bet. I'm close, buddy. I'm close to giving you that finally that double or nothing you always want.
Can I make a quick plug too?
Oh my gosh!
Go? Yeah,
Herding Donkeys.
You want to make the plug for me?
Yes, Herding Donkeys has come out in paperback, folks, with a new. Is it afterward or forward?
New afterward.
Afterward. I got it just free floating, so I didn't know where it. Folks, check this book out. We're going to put a link on majority.fm. This is a great read. Ari Berman is a great writer. And maybe not so great with wagering, but very good with writing.
Thanks, Sam. I appreciate it.
All right, I'll talk to you soon.
See you later.
Thanks, Ari. We'll be right back with Jeff Smith.
Take the skinheads bowling. Take them bowling. Some people say that bowling alley's got big lanes.
Got big lanes. Got big lanes.
Some people say that bowling alleys all look the same. There's not a line that goes here that rhymes with anything.
Anything.
Had a dream last night, but I forget what it was.
What it was. What it was.
Take the skinheads bowling. Take them bowling. Take the skinheads bowling. Take them bowling. Had a dream last night about you, my friend.
Folks, you thought, there's no way. I mean, when Sam says Jeff Smith is on the Occupy Wall Street bus, he's not literally on the bus. Oh, yes, he is. And I think they must be going through a tunnel because we cannot reach him on his cell phone. So we will speak to Jeff tomorrow. Folks, on our site at majority.fm, in our quixotic attempt to get advertising for the free podcast, there is a survey with a different company. Libsyn couldn't get, even though we were over 13 times the amount of downloads that they say they need to place advertising, because we're doing a liberal politics show, it's just not available. And so we're going to a different sort of system. Hopefully they'll be able to do it. We don't know until after we do the survey. And then I think we have for them even like 24 times, literally the amount of downloads a month that they require as a minimum for advertising to be placed. So please go to majority.fm. There's a link in today's post, and they'll be in any post from today on. Where you take the survey. The survey should take you literally about 4 minutes. They have like one page per question, and they're simple questions, not like what happens if Jane leaves from Detroit on a train in 6 hours, and it's none of that. It's literally easier than my six-year-old's homework, which is not to imply that she's getting full-on algebraic questions in her homework. The questions are usually like, they have this thing like, you know, the input and the output function, you know,
believe me, it's not hard. I mean, sometimes it's hard, but it's hard for me. For her, it seems to be impossible. But I'm not convinced that she's that bright. But that's not the issue. The issue is this survey should be very easy for you to complete. We, of course, need members more than anything. So if you can become a member at majorityfm.fm, I would beseech you to do so. And like I say, we get kickbacks on these Amazon purchases. You can go to majority.fm, click on the support the show, and the Amazon information is there. You just click on the link, you bookmark it, you never know a difference. But then all of a sudden, next thing you know, I'm styling, I'm driving around in, I'm making $200,000, $300,000 bets with just people I see on the street. You know, it doesn't have to be just Mitt Romney up there going, like, want to bet $10,000? Could be Sam Cedar doing that, too. We don't quite make that much off the Amazon thing, but it's very close. You want to make a $10,000 bet? Wouldn't that be great, folks? You can also support the show by buying a coffee, tea, or chocolate at justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, 10% discount. Are you listening through iTunes? Have you reviewed the show? Why? Well, I was assuming they said, no, I haven't. And I'm like, why? Why haven't you? That's what I was doing.
Okay.
And then you respond, because I got other things to do. I got to play Nintendo. I got to pick up the kids or whatever it is. Or maybe it's just because, Sam, deep down, I don't like you. And even though I listen to you every day, I don't like you. And I can't give you a good review. Not in good conscience, anyways. All right. Fine. I don't care what you say. Let's just agree not to argue about this. How about that? I mean, I'm willing to have the argument with you if you really want to have this argument now. But I think we shouldn't do this not in front of Matt, because he gets him very upset when we argue. In the better half of the program today, bank settlement scuttled. No Muslim terrorists, sorry. Sorry for all of you who are hoping that we would see more Muslim terrorists. Looks like we're just stuck with the Patriot Act and every other horrible infringement on our civil liberties. All right, folks. Talk to you later.